Hi, welcome back to Attention Recession. I'm Nicola. I'm here with Jazz as always. And today
Hello.
we have a special guest, writer Magdalene Taylor. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so excited to have you on here. You're so Attention Recession coded. For the uninitiated, how would you summarize your work and writing?
Well, I call myself like a sexual culture writer, or a sex and culture writer. I do a lot of internet culture criticism, but I think my particular specialty is how internet culture has manipulated what we might see as like real life culture in contrast to internet culture. And I'm increasingly trying to figure out how we can prioritize the real world again. I think that's kind of the running theme of my work.
Yeah, that's like so much of what we talk about too, is just how, or at least like the beginning of where, at least like Attention Recession started off as my TikTok handle, and then Jazz liked it and thought it would be a good name for a podcast. But I kind of like the name came to me as just like, yeah, there's so much grabbing for our attention that we're in an attention recession. There's not like, there's so much to pay attention to that we, our attention has become like a commodity that we don't like, it is being spent without our consciousness, like that we have to kind of like reclaim conscious spending of our attention because it's affecting us in so many different ways. And you recently wrote something on Substack about phones and loneliness, which we're going to touch on. But first, I want to talk about Sydney Sweeney, who is also really in your wheelhouse because you have written and commented a great deal on Big Naturals,
Yes.
a recurring theme.
Yeah, absolutely. I was remarking recently with a friend that I think that the term big naturals has sort of like jumped the shark recently. Like big naturals has really been it's been pushed pretty hard.
Yeah.
But I still do love the term. And yeah, I'm definitely very interested in how we culturally perceive big boobs. So
You know
Sydney Sweeney
what?
is a big part of that.
A couple weeks ago, we were talking about, and actually, I think you and I were texting about, but we were talking about on the pod about, I think we were talking about, like, I was trying to remember how I was socialized, like, as a peak millennial, like the male gaze or whatever. And I was trying to remember, like, 90s era hot women stuff and, like, the idea of, like, a natural hottie. And like a natural hottie obviously had like natural boobs, natural nails, natural hair, and how much like artificial, like hair, nails, boobs, face, etc., like how much of that stuff has been like normalized into beauty that we don't even like. It used to, I feel like growing up, there was a stigma between like fake tits and like real tits. You know what I mean? Like that was such a, especially in like just thinking of like classic like men man cave beer commercial, the man show, like that kind of era of like understanding women through men, through advertising, etc. Like Big Naturals is such a throwback to that and can only be understood in contrast to the idea of, well, I guess either small or unnatural.
Well, and what's funny about it though is that like that is the obvious binary that the term big naturals presents is, you know, between small naturals and big naturals or big naturals and big fake boobs. But I think that like right now we see the binary as being much more between big boobs and big butts.
Yes.
Which is what I think is really going on right now with the Sydney Sweeney discourse and the big boob discourse is we're not really talking about big fake boobs that much anymore. We're definitely thinking more about big butts, particularly big fake butts.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is definitely what's like so central to the big boob discourse right now is that we believe that we've been in like an ass-centric discourse where boobs haven't been important. I don't think that's totally true. But yeah.
It's interesting too. I was talking to one of my friends yesterday about how like excited we were as like young girls to like get boobs one day. And I remember like watching even movies like Burlesque with Christina Aguilera or Mean Girls with Lindsay Lohan. Like, I assumed all of their boobs were real and they were so like big. And then the girls were so skinny and were like, oh, that's like so normal. Like, and so it's just interesting. I'm trying to think like growing up, like how many weren't actually natural, because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that look in the 2000s was so normal. I really am just picturing like Burlesque era Christina Aguilera. Like, I was like, oh, that's a normal body. But then now rewatching the movie, I was like, oh, those boobs seem fake. I don't know if they are, but like that ratio is so not normal. But like growing up watching that, it's just, it throws you into like a doozy a little bit, you know?
That was also the era of the Victoria's Secret add two sizes push-up bra. Yeah. I forget what it was called, but the whole thing was that it would – yeah, the bombshell. So it's like even if you had – it doesn't even matter because it was so standard to wear a bra that would mimic two sizes. And people don't wear that much padding anymore. Like it is so much more normal to wear like even no bra or to wear a bra that's like mesh or something. Like
I will say though, I recently acquired a Skims bra. And it's one of their push-up bras, but I kind of assumed it would be like a pretty normal push-up bra. Like these days, a push-up bra has some padding, but it's not the bombshell to add two cups.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us are out here with an add two cup style push-up bra on and just not talking about it, thanks to Ms. Kim. I'm definitely like, wow, my boobs are not this big.
Like, drop the link.
Yeah, no. See, Kim is out here putting us in the add two cups bras, and we're not talking enough about it.
I'm kind of interested in that because I've been watching Real Housewives OC from like 2008. Like, yeah, from a while ago. Boob jobs. Every episode, there's like boob jobs. Talk about boobs, etc. And it's very like, oh, no. Oh, wait. Did we just lose Jazz?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay. I guess we can just keep talking. She can edit this out. Yeah. So they're talking about boob jobs and like, and it's just that era of like, I love these women because they're so unapologetic about just like, I want to be super fucking blonde, huge tits, need to be skinny. Like they say things like, it's summer, I don't eat. Like it's so refreshing to just hear women be honest about like lengths that they go to pre like lying about those things, you know?
Yeah.
But it makes me want to be like, and they talk about like how, yeah, as a woman in OC, like you get power through having huge tits. And it's like, oh, I kind of want to go get like, because I've always been sort of shy about showing too much boob. And now I'm like, I want to just like go do an experiment and, wear like a huge push-up bra, walk around and see what kind of power I amass.
No, that's what I'm really thinking about is like when they say like, you know, big boobs give you power, I do think that that's probably, I think that that's true, but it is like, what kind of power are they talking about? Like I think I would love to hear a specific example. Yeah
I feel like, because that's what I feel like when I look at the women on OC and I see their big boobs and their little tank tops, I'm like, they make me happy. Your big boobs do make me happy. Like I like looking at them.
Yeah.
And not even like I'm lusting over them or there's anything individual about you, Gretchen, or you, Tamara, but I'm just like, God, those look great. I'll love them.
Yeah. Yeah. It does look great. I do think like big boobs do, they make people happy, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too, like,
well, I guess also, you know, in the case of Sydney Sweeney, they also make people like fucking insane.
So, I mean, I
don't know. I think we're in a pretty weird place right now with that.
Did you watch the episode?
Watch the episode of SNL? No, I actually have not.
Yeah, actually, I was like kind of amazed that Hooters is like got that what added brand value or whatever, like that they got her like in the shirt. I was like, that's amazing for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was definitely like a, I felt pretty optimistic seeing that. Even though I don't know what the skit was about. But
yeah,
I don't know. I haven't heard any like right-wing chuds complain about the Hooters bit specifically. So it couldn't have been too lib-brained or whatever.
Yeah, I saw much discourse happening this week, but I did not watch the SNL episode or the clip. I saw bits of the clips online, and I saw various different kinds of people being mad for various different reasons. But my general impression is like Sydney's like I felt happy. I think Sydney Sweeney is a beautiful girl, and I love seeing her beautiful body.
You're so funny. Yeah, and she looked happy. I actually,
and I also don't think that Sydney Sweeney like does. Like, I think she's smart. I think she's aware that she's a hot girl with a great rack, and I think she knows what she's doing. So that's all that I think and know so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, I participated in the discourse via TikTok this week, starting with they did an intro advertisement to her episode, and their kind of joke with two other girls from SNL were like, and Kacey Musgraves as well, talking about like, yeah, like, I actually have a lot of male fans. Like, I wonder why. And they're like, yeah, I wonder why. And for some reason that sent me into this like thought spiral. I was like, it feels strange to me to call them her fans, like these men that are obsessed with her and her body. And I was like, the way that women are fans of like men, they're like, I know his hometown. I know where he grew up. I know his hobbies. I know like everything about him. But like, I wouldn't call the way that these men are treating Sydney Sweeney like her fans. You know what I mean? And so I was just like curious, like that angle, especially on a comedy show. I guess I felt like I would love her to step out of that role a little bit and do kind of, I don't know. I think it is really easy. And this is what SNL does a lot. They find an actor. They did this with Jacob Elordi as well. They like put you in this like box and they make every skit about like you being like hot and you being like an actor.
Yeah.
And you know, and I guess I shouldn't expect a lot from SNL because they kind of have been doing the same stuff, but I'm like, on a comedy show, it would be great if they like put her in like an ugly wig and like made her like a creature, or you know what I mean? Like dress up as like Dobby or just something like unexpected, you know? Like I did think like the Hooters thing was funny, but it was very expected. I wanted her to kind of like step into comedy a little bit. I don't know. But I also get it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's pretty reasonable. Like it would be. It would be fun to see a little more, variety, particularly, I think that's particularly with respect to SNL, because I feel like, you know, Sydney Sweeney, I mean, she hasn't done anything where she's like comically grotesque, but she's yeah. definitely had a couple of roles where it's like, the point isn't that she's like super fucking hot.
Exactly. Yeah.
There was the HBO film about Reality Winner, the NSA leaker woman, and in that she's, you know, she's not wearing any makeup, and well, I mean that's a whole part of the discourse too, is guys presenting pictures of her all done up and then like pictures of her in that role and other things that she's done where she's not wearing any makeup and being like, look at, you know,
yeah,
what a lie this is.
Like, those same guys are turning on her. They're like circulating these pictures being like, actually Sydney Sweeney's really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's like you're saying, like, these guys aren't actually truly fans. Like a lot of these guys don't even really like women in general, which is, I think, what a lot of the no makeup posts in particular show. It's like, oh, you don't like Sydney Sweeney with like her beautiful bare face, like looking, you know, very cute and fresh and natural. It's like, oh, you don't actually like women at all. Like you don't even like what you don't like who women are, what they represent. You
You don't want to wake up next to this person.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you don't want to, like, you don't want to cherish next to her.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Okay. Exactly. You don't want to see her for who she truly is and like enjoy her natural state. Like, you don't really like women. It's weird. I don't. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that is a really good example of how the internet and, you know, porn more specifically, has really distorted, you know, people's ability to be normal. And like, they can, there's a lot of people who only know how to engage and interact with something from the lens of it being pornographic, and treat it with that same, like, really, I don't know, horn dog perspective. Like, I mean, you know, people have always, you know, in movies and stuff before, you know, before internet porn was so dominant, like, surely there's plenty of moments that people paused and rewind, like, very specific little bits of, like, a girl's boobs looking really good. Or like, you know, Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct, like, people rewinded that little bit of her uncrossing her legs all the time. Like, that's not totally new. But this kind of, like, that brazen, you know, engaging with, like, you have a social media account, and like, what you're doing with it is like talking about like how much you love this like one little part of like Sydney Sweeney's boobs jiggling. Like, you've kind of you've mutated that into like your online identity, and then, you know, by extension, your identity writ large. I think it's also like a lot of these guys, you know, not only do they not know how to talk to women in real life, I would venture to guess a lot of them don't even really know how to talk to men in real life either. And they're not doing a lot of real life engagement in general. Like, having a super online brain does often make it difficult for you to have a normal conversation with people and, you know, relate to a group of guys. Like, again, like, it is pretty normal for a group of guys, hypothetically, to, like, you know, be talking about how hot they think Sydney Sweeney is. But I think that it probably, for the people who are engaging with it, you know, on Twitter in this super porn-brained way, I imagine it doesn't translate very well when if you're trying to have a conversation with people in real life. But again, I think that's also a big if. I imagine probably also a lot of these people aren't really trying to have these conversations in real life at all. Like, they're just not really engaging with people in real life.
What's so strange too about the way, like, the commenting of, like, men on women online is that it seems like you can't even just say, like, oh, it's young men. Like, young men who are so porn sick because they've been growing up with it since they were 8 years mm-hmm. old, blah, blah, blah. It's, like, older guys, too. Like, it's, like, guys who were socialized totally differently, who it only took them this last 20 years or whatever to undo whatever decorum they were raised with. Like, yeah. And it's interesting because it's, like, oh, you didn't need to be raised with this. You just needed to be indoctrinated in the same period of time that – it doesn't matter that you have the memory of, like, porn being scarce and, oh, I had to, like, sneak my dad's magazine and I had to memorize it in my head and, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, all that's out the window. Who fucking cares? Now it's at my fingertips. And Sydney Sweeney isn't, like, rarefied because there are so many women with this, like, you can look at so many people who look like this. I feel like that was when, like, Instagram models first came out, just, like, generally kind of, like, sexy girls who just, like, had insane proportions. That was the first thing that, like, blew me away is how many of them there were. I was like, wait, I can imagine a couple of people like this existing with this body, this level of fitness, this level of, like, surgery, this level of upkeep. But I was like, how can there be so many of these people? There's, like, endless amounts of these people. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about that recently myself. How many extremely hot, like, extremely surgically enhanced, extremely fit women there are, and how, like, how little clout that gets.
Yeah.
So many people, because there's so many people who look like that. I think the internet has flattened some of the perceived value we think that has. Like, it's like, oh no, it turns out like you can be extremely hot and have spent a bunch of money on your body and your face and, you know, your upkeep, and like you're still probably gonna like fuck some like bum ass dude.
Yep.
Like, you're not necessarily going to be like on yachts with millionaires.
Yeah, we'll get into this later, but I've taken many extended breaks from social media, and like I've actually been like making an effort to go on X more, and but I go on infrequently, and then I go on and I'm like, why is this trending? And I go on and it's like big boobs, and I'm like, wait, why are big boobs trending? Like, not connecting it to the Sydney Sweeney thing. And I feel like for me, I felt like the big boobs, and I actually do want to get back to that big boobs versus big butts comment we were having earlier. But I feel like for me, the shift happened with TikTok. Like, to me, Instagram was the big butts app, and it's like still images. Well, also videos. But to me, in TikTok, because it's forward-facing video and like talking, like adding lots of cleavage adds more visual interest, the same way that like text on screen or bright colored outfit does. So to me, TikTok immediately was like the cleavage app, because would you rather like hear from someone like, hey, let's like make cookies today, or like, hey, let's make cookies today. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it doesn't even matter if you're into boobs or not. It's like this, like, all of a sudden there's this huge, like, because it is, what is the word I'm looking for? Like, it's something that is a little, it's edgy, right? Like, it's something that is adding like a bit of, even if you're not attracted to women or attracted to boobs or attracted to cleavage or whatever, like, you know that something is being signaled to you that's like eye-catching, because you know that it's a little bit like playing with the fringes or whatever, even though it's just cleavage, but it's massive cleavage and it's in your face, and it, and you look at videos longer, like you just do, because your eye's kind of drawn to that, and then you're listening to what they're saying. So to me, like, big boobs started like immediately becoming, surpassing big butts, like when TikTok started surpassing Instagram.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about like what you're saying about the, you know, come with me to get a boob job thing. And like, it is more, those videos are more about like signaling to, you know, a female audience. But I also like, I'm thinking about like what people hope like the end game of those types of videos to be. And, you know, I imagine it must be like they hope that this video gets enough views and that they themselves can also pivot into like a sort of influencer type of role, and like, you know, that this boob job will lead to like brand deals. It's like, it's not that they want male attention, or like specifically just the validation of female attention, but like probably also just the validation of getting to be an influencer. Kind of an aside, I am seeing a huge influx of eating disorder content on Twitter. On Twitter, it's in my For You page as well, where it's like girls being like really mean to each other, like calling each other fat and saying like, oh, you're never gonna be 70 pounds because you like eat spaghetti sometimes. It's like, what? You shouldn't be 70 pounds. How? I don't think you can. I don't think an adult woman really can be 70 pounds.
You know, it's what, really, though?
I'm getting scared, basically.
Sometimes I think what this is that, like, you're watching someone else be younger than you, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm watching 14 to 17-year-olds mm-hmm. be 14 mm-hmm. to 17. And
yeah, maybe always, a 14-year-old can be 70 pounds still. I don't know
what I mean? But, like, you're watching, like, it's not like something's trending again. It's just that you're observing young women, and they're always going to be there. And they're always going to be seeping through the crack, and they're always going to have eating disorders.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been thinking about this a lot of like, what's a trend and what's just like, you've aged enough that you're observing something for the first time that you're not in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible, like, those might not be your peers. They might just be younger girls.
I mean, I don't hope that's the case because it's still sad for them, but I guess I feel better about that being the case.
Okay, wait, to go back to Sydney Sweeney, I just had one question I wanted to get about that before we close that topic, because everyone was like, this is the end of wokeness. And I was like, I really did want to find out what the end of that thread was. Why was it the end of wokeness? Because she was like conventionally hot?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that they like, by pushing Sydney Sweeney as, you know, as like her most beautiful, like feminine, boobish self, like we, that like it's reasserting like the supremacy of beauty, and like the power of not subverting these kinds of beauty standards, I think.
Of like white, thin, blonde, like clear skin. Yeah, like all the Eurocentric, like all the bits. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, also, I think like a much broader, a totally different thread to go down is just how the term woke and like what wokeness is has become a catch-all for like literally anything.
I'm kind of obsessed with what woke has become to mean. Like, it's really funny to me now.
Yeah, you can use it. You can use it anywhere. But like it means literally anything.
But it just it means whatever Republicans don't like is woke.
Yeah.
A whale being gay—that's woke culture.
Oh my god, so funny. I also wanted to ask you, Magdalene. Like, I hope this is not a sensitive thing, but I think you would be open to talking about it. But I wanted to ask you about the role of like posting body like as a writer, because I know that you use images of yourself as part of your social media like strategy. I don't know if I want to say like strategy, but like I know you know what you're doing, and I would love to hear you like talk about like body, writer, posting, being a woman, all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I like wanted to package that in like a fancy way or something, it could be, you know, something about, I think like a lot of writers and female writers maybe have some kind of pressure to like assert how their work stands on its own without like any sort of image of the writer themselves attached to it. And I don't care about that. And you know, maybe if I wanted to, I could say like, I'm subverting something in doing that. But at the end of the day, I enjoy attention. If I'm going to post a picture on Twitter, which I like to do, cause like I said, I like attention, I'm probably going to make sure that my cleavage looks good in the picture. Definitely I'm leaning into this in the same way that, you know, maybe somebody like Sydney Sweeney is with their breasts. But I do think that like I have been able to somewhat successfully pivot some of the men who have maybe become part of my audience because of my image and my, you know, propensity to post cleavage. I have been able to bring some of that audience into like my actual readership. Like, you know, maybe they are not hardcore fans, as we were talking about, like in the way like a lot of the male fans of Sydney Sweeney are not really fans. I'm sure I have plenty of that, but a lot of these guys do actually read my work. And you know, I also, being a writer, a lot of that is a numbers game, and like acquiring a book deal, for example, all of the social media numbers, while they might ultimately be kind of meaningless, like they definitely look good in trying to acquire a book deal, like saying that you have a certain number of followers on Twitter or on your Substack or whatever, like all of that helps. And so I'm willing to play that game, basically.
Yeah.
But also, you know, at the end of the day, like I can frame it in all of these, you know, practical, like, or like philosophical ways, but like, I do also just, I like feeling pretty and I like attention too. So, yeah, it's definitely a mix of both of those things.
I've always felt like it's hard when you're online and you're being like, when you're trying to decide, like, am I going to be online to represent myself, like, as a professional, like, as a writer or as, like, whatever my job is, like, and, or am I going to be online to just, like, have fun with my friends and, like, enjoy myself, whatever, or am I going to try to bridge the gap between the two, as many of us who are kind of, like, have, like, creative professional jobs are. And I also think, like, yeah, when it comes to, like, unfortunately for, like, pretty much everything, like, having higher numbers on your social media accounts, like, will get you work, you know, like, no matter what your work is, unless if you work in anything that has to do with publicity, which is a lot of kinds of work these days. And if they can put in a deck, so-and-so has this many followers, like, it's going to be more attractive to whoever's going to write the check. And I think that if you're a woman, like, one of your assets, like, is, if you're a young woman, if you're a woman of any age, but especially as a young woman, like, one of your assets can be your looks, and it's, like, up to you if you decide you want to, like, leverage that or not. And it's just very interesting, like, you see different people go different routes with this, and of course, like, as women, we judge each other for, like, how we see each other do it, and it's very interesting watching other female writers go to different routes and, like, semi-nude, and you're just like, whoa, girl, like, that's a lot, like, love you, you look great, but, like, a bit, like, whoa, like, I definitely, your boss is on here too, and I don't know,
I definitely did stuff like that when I was a little bit younger and, like, had a little bit smaller of an account, like, posting more, like, like, pseudo nudes, even, like, lingerie pics, whatever, like, not straightforwardly, but, like, stuff that it's like, oh, I would not post that now.
Yeah,
definitely on Twitter, like, I'm always surprised by what flies and what we're all willing to post, and I wonder if, you know, maybe in a couple of years I'm gonna look back at, like, all my, like, all the pictures I've posted where my cleavage is insane, and I'm gonna be like, maybe I'll be embarrassed by that in a couple of years. But I don't know. That's the other thing I think is that works so well about cleavage is that, like, it's kind of timeless. Whereas, you know, like, people have always had cleavage, and, like, if you have big boobs, your boobs are probably going to look big in a picture. But that is something that separates it, I think, from the ass era, is, like, posting a picture of your ass is, it's a bit more of a statement, you know?
Yeah.
Because of where it is on your body, and, like, we've been talking about with how TikTok, you know, if you're going to be face forward, you're probably also going to see your cleavage, but to post your ass is a very intentional effort.
Yeah, it takes more posing and everything. Yeah. Anyway, quick aside. Okay, so let's get to the meat of this and talk about your recent Substack article. It's obviously The Phones, which I guess for just a quick summary, you kind of, well, okay, you do your quick summary. I won't summarize it.
Okay. So, you know, there's a lot of data that suggests that we are all lonelier than ever. We spend more time alone than ever, but also notably we're unhappier and, like, actually experiencing loneliness more than ever. It's not simply just that, like, we're spending time by ourselves and we're happy with that. So, you know, a lot of us are pretty lonely, have fewer friends, having less sex, all that sort of thing. And there are a lot of very broad cultural economic shifts that we can highlight as the cause of that. You know, we can say that things have gotten more expensive and that there are fewer places to hang out with people and meet, and that's all true. But at the end of the day, like, we are all spending way too much fucking time on our phones. And yes, that is, to me, obviously impacting our social lives. and that if we did not have this device connecting us to the internet at any possible day, at any possible moment, anywhere we are, that we might be a little bit more inclined to prioritize the real world.
Yes. So, yeah, my first question is, who is defending the phones? Because I feel like I saw you tweeting about this before you wrote it, and it was like, it seemed like there was some kind of, like, this was, or that this was, like, some kind of response to, like, someone was trying to defend the phones. And I was like, who?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always surprised when I see that. Like, I mean, I think a lot of us do very much understand that the phones are the problem. But I still, like, when I posted that I posted a graph from The Atlantic about how teenagers are not hanging out as much anymore, and the point in time in which the most dramatic declines begin to occur is right, like, around the release of the iPhone. When I posted that, you know, there were plenty of people who were in agreement with the sentiment, but so many people, like, that tweet got so much engagement and has, like, 30 million views or something. A lot of people quote tweeting me to say, like, you know, there's no places to hang out anymore, or it's because things are so expensive. There was just, like, a lot of resistance to the idea that our phones are the problem. And I'm not at all saying that, like, the economic component of this isn't part of it. And that the lack of places to be isn't a part of it. But I actually think it's all interconnected. I think that, like, the economy is the way it is because we have a very, like, we have, like, a technocratic economy right now where the biggest companies in the world are all, you know, it's Meta, it's Google, it's Amazon, you know, which is, you know, Amazon is more of, like, a web data company than it is just, like, a buying shit website. All of these are companies who are incentivized to keep us online as much as possible. Like, of course that's going to impact the economy. But anyway, so generally, I think that the people who are pushing back on this idea, should I continue if she just jumped out or?
Yeah.
I think the people who are pushing back on this idea, mainly, I think it's a lot of older millennials and maybe, like, Gen X, who were, like, the youngest people to use the internet. Like, they're people who they didn't grow up online in the same way that, like, Gen Z has, but, like, they were, like, the first ones to be young people to an experience pushback from, like, boomers about, like, the internet and about, like, being online. And so I think that, like, they feel particularly defensive towards it. But then also I think a lot of it is, like, young Gen Z who has had their whole life be online. And, you know, I think that a lot of the people who are most resistant to the idea of phones being the problem are probably the ones who are actually using their phones the most and, like, feel the most attached to their phones. And, you know, want to say that, like, their phone is their phone and the internet writ large, like, social media. When I'm talking about phones, I'm talking about, like, social media and
but also the software of how the smartphones are designed.
It's not specifically,
it's the apps, but it's also the software
it's also, like, this new thing that has come up with social media even in the last couple years is, like, how you can curate this entire life on the internet that is better than your real life. Like, you can be famous, you can be popular, like,
right?
It's, I don't know, there was, like, a lot of conversation around, like, people are embarrassing themselves in public so that they can be more popular online. They're, like, quite literally choosing their online world over their real 100%. Life because it's more lucrative. And I, you know, am in, like, the TikTok content creator world. And so I, like, know all these other influencers and stuff, and I see it firsthand. It's like, they will miss out on an entire like party so that they can be vlogging it on their phone, because that's more important than like being present. It's like that kind of like clout. And this, I even see this with like young, like people now in like high school and middle school and stuff. Like the whole world is on their phone. They have so many social dynamics on like TikTok and like whatever, Snapchat, whatever apps that they're using, that like when parents try to take away their phones, they have a full meltdown because like they're taking away their entire life. It's like grounding them and like shedding them in a room, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I say all of this about phones. Like, I'm so critical about phones and phone culture because I'm addicted to my phone. Like, I know I'm talking to myself here. like I wrote in the piece, like my average phone, my daily phone usage is like 6 hours a day. That's a fucking ton of time to be on my phone. Like, what would I be doing with myself if I wasn't on my phone all the time? Like, I would probably at least be a little bit happier, even if I'm just watching TV or, you know, especially like reading a book. Like, oh my God. But like, it is crazy to me also how our definition of screen time, like if I'm watching TV and my phone is in the other room, like that is, I'm like, yeah, a fucking pilgrim. Like I'm, I feel like so accomplished, yeah, to like watch television and not be on my phone.
No, I literally think I'm so superior because my screen time is like 3 hours, 2.5 hours.
Wow,
but then I watch, but then I have TV on all day. So I'm like,
yeah, it's slow media.
The thing is, like, there's the idea of like, it's interesting because it's, yeah, like we have like quote unquote alone time, but we're not actually alone, because true alone time is not having any other inputs, like no other personalities are around you.
Yeah.
Whether that's like a podcast, TV, social media, even like characters in a book, like truly being in the shower with your own thoughts or whatever. So we're actually like, we're alone, but we actually don't spend hardly any time like with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is why, like I alluded earlier, like I've tried to like run away from social media before. I've done like, I think both of you have known me long enough to like know that I go on these like multi-month like leaving social media things, yeah, because I want to know what it would like, and I've been doing this for like many years now, but I wanted to know like what would it be like to only exist like in my true material reality, like what is my life without social media, like who are the, mm-hmm, people I actually like talk to every day, like what is my life if I don't give myself the distraction of Instagram or whatever, like what will I fill my time with instead? And yeah, there have been periods that do feel really lonely. And I have decided that I think that the connection of social media, like with real friends, like real people that I know, sending like memes or having DM combos or whatever, does count as true connection, because it like does make me feel close to people like that I really know, and like that counts and is valuable.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I don't know, that it's not that like you can't completely run away from it. You can't completely shut it out, or I can't, mm-hmm, or I don't want to entirely, because I think that being out of step, yeah, with other people isn't worth it. Kind of the same way that like when we talk about not drinking and like the social consequences, mm-hmm, of not drinking, or like following any kind of extreme that has like social consequences, where you wind up isolating yourself by trying to like protect yourself too much, and then, yeah, you are alone in a different way. But sorry, big tangent.
No, but I think, yeah, it's totally relevant. Like I'm not calling for the complete abolition of smartphones. Like I'm not saying that we should all be off social media, because like, I mean, God knows I'm not going to stop being on social media. Yeah. But again,
it's
like
not going anywhere.
Yeah. I think it does have value. Like it does. It's not like the relationships that you know, you can form on social media, or like the way that social media can help you maintain relationships with people that you have. It's not like that's fake. Like that, you know, I don't think it's as good as in-person connections, but like, it does bring a lot of people a sense of fulfillment that they wouldn't have otherwise.
I thought it was interesting in your piece how you say, like, we could all choose to be experiencing the company of our friends and family at home for free, and we choose not to. And that, like, really struck for me because I love my alone time, and I almost feel like I could almost use more of it. And it's like, sometimes I'll like think about that for myself and I'm like, do I actually want more alone time? Or is it just that I'm so used to it that getting out of this mode and into social mode is becoming increasingly harder because I'm doing it increasingly less. And it's like getting into that, like into shape for that is becoming like a mental barrier or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's something I'm definitely struggling with a lot lately is like, wow, staying home on my couch like feels really good.
So it's such a beautiful part of a relationship or a friendship when you both reach the point where you can like have the moment where you both kind of quietly look at the phone and then yeah. you rejoin hanging out together.
Yeah. And like, you know, I think there's totally space for that. Like, yeah, you're hanging out with somebody for a little bit. Like you don't have to like act like your phone doesn't exist, but yeah, I think we should be like interrogating why it is our phones make us feel that way. Like why we get this like insatiable urge to scroll for a while. And I think it is like, I think it, you know, these apps like TikTok has been designed to do that to us. I think like it's like something else is like intentionally taking our attention away from us. And we should want to push back on that a bit.
Yeah, I was just like, I was like, oh, I thought we all like understood that the phones were bad for us. And like,
yeah.
The apps are gamified and they're all designed to keep us on for as long as possible and damage us.
Yeah.
And the colors are optimized.
Yeah. We connect with so much more intimacy when like the phones are not a factor. Like, when I was like so dizzy that I couldn't go on a phone or watch TV or movies with him, we're like, what do? It's like 7 p.m. We already ate dinner. And we ended up like doing like an improv game together that like he had like learned in college and just like silly stuff like that. And it like just forces you to be present. And I think like, I've been dealing with a lot of like social anxiety this year that I've never super experienced in the past of just like, okay, I'm about to hang out with someone for a couple hours. Usually I like start to get really like social, like drained by the end where I'm like, oh my God, I can't talk to anyone. You know what I mean? And I like just wonder if that's just feeling really exposed for a long period of time, like in person, like connecting with someone, socializing, like, I don't know. Like I've been really trying to unpack that.
Yeah. I feel like, in the last like couple of years, I've been aware of this in myself. And like, I've been thinking like, if this is how everyone is going to be, like if everyone's going to be weak, how do I want to be strong? Mm-hmm. Like if everyone's going to be weak and sick and ill, I'm going to be strong because I'm going to have an attention span. I'm going to be like able to pick up the phone and call people. Like I'm like literally thinking about like skills I can have. I don't like literally be strong in the herd. Is that like, I feel so crazy saying that, but I think about this stuff where I'm like, if this is how society is trending and I don't want to just say like, okay, I'll just be like that too. I'm like, okay, if this is how everyone's going to get sick and ill, then like I'm going to take steps to like not
this
be
is
that
your
like I want to be
stay
like,
prepping
stronger than that and like mm-hmm. I want to like rise above. It's just like I want to like I don't want to be a loser like in 2040 who's like can't go outside and like I don't know.
Yeah. No, I've been thinking a lot about how we just kind of we do need to recenter like you know, the gospel of self-responsibility and
oh
self-respect.
My God. I know. Like, I'm like so big on this right now in a way that like I was saying to you, Magdalene, over text, I was like, we need like Jordan Peterson for girls. Like we need like someone needs, or I was saying, I was like, it would be amazing if somehow girls got into like clean your room, like get over anxiety, just like get it together, stop making excuses. Cause I was thinking, I was like, sometimes I can't even believe what I can get away with. Like with my mental illness, like, like, oh, maybe I get it over. Like, and other people are okay with it. And I'm just like, even for myself, I'm just like, why don't you like respect yourself and just like try harder, bitch? Like just do it. I do think that there is like, I feel like there is going to be some kind of like personal responsibility moment, but it's like, not everyone has to go that route. There's going to always be space for like, I'm a victim of circumstances such as like the apps are addicting and there's nothing I can do about it because I'm just a user of the apps. And there's nothing I can do about it. But like, then there's going to be people who are like, actually, there's stuff you can do about it.
Well, that's what frustrates me so much about people who want to deny that it's the phones, because not only are they like relinquishing themselves of responsibility, they're relinquishing, you know, the tech companies of responsibility too. Like, what do you get from defending the phones? How does that help you in your life? Like,
they
want you to feel that way. Like that it's not, that it's not the phones. Like you're being taken advantage of here.
Mm-hmm. I know. I actually was thinking about this. Like, I feel like in terms of weight loss or making like, not in Ozempic, but like real weight loss, like really like when you have to make a fucking lifestyle change, part of that is like, you have to become so honest with yourself and like you have to really like take stock of, I don't know, like you just have to be so brutally honest with yourself. Like you can't lie to yourself because like the changes won't show up on your body if you lie to yourself. Like that you will only get results if you are brutally fucking honest with yourself. And like there's some kind of like pulling yourself up like by your bootstraps kind of mentality that goes with that, that I'm like, yeah, there's like a harshness, or almost same thing with like bodybuilding or like strength training or something like that, where it's like, you're only going to get results if you're like, you can't, there's no faking it. Like, there's no lying around it. Cause it's just like the results won't come.
Yeah. You know, I feel like we have all been beaten down by the economy and by like global unrest and like the pandemic and all of these things like have made it so like it's pretty normal that you like want to just like give up, but like we don't really have the option of doing that, actually.
Yeah.
Like you just can't really do that. And you shouldn't just resign yourself to thinking that you can. Which I think is what a lot of people have done.
I know. And like, I was, when you were talking earlier about how people are like, there's no third spaces anymore. Like that pisses me off because there are like churches still exist. Mm-hmm. There are still cafes. There are bars. There are libraries. There are gyms. There are bookstores. Like maybe you're not going to them, but they're there. Like,
yeah.
You
know? No, exactly.
I don't know. Like I feel a bit like, maybe it's because I'm on this like personal responsibility tip and I'm like kind of viewing people's comments a little bit more through it, but I'm just kind of like, I feel like I'm noticing more and more people saying things where I'm like, that's not entirely true. You actually, like, maybe it would be inconvenient or difficult or impractical, but what you're saying isn't impossible.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I know like coffee has gotten more expensive, like
Coffee is still $3. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah,
but it's maybe like, you want a latte, mocha, but if you want a drip coffee, I'm sorry, it's still $3.
Yeah, like you can still go do that. Like maybe it's not in your budget to go do that every single day. Maybe you don't have the time in your work day to go do that. I get it, but like, brother, you are not entirely powerless here. Like, there's something you can do.
Like, if you don't like your life, grab a piece of paper and write down like the kind of life you would want to have, and then decide like what is like something of that list that you could like start doing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, it's not impossible to change your life. You change one part of your life at a time. Like, I don't know.
I think that you need to become the Jordan Peterson for women. For women? Like, in the, you know, make your bed type of thing, like you were talking about.
I know. Yeah. And then the women, you know what they're going to do? First thing, come for the looks. You know? Second thing, like, come for my man. Then come for how I parrot my dog. Like, just the lionesses, like, tearing me down. I hate myself. I have tons of plastic surgery. I hate myself. I'm on Ozempic. I'm off Ozempic. I've gained an extra 100 pounds. Like,
that's the
this
cycle.
Is why I have so little interest in being like a truly public persona, because I know it would only ruin my life.
So I'm curious. That. I feel like that. My kind of thoughts on this. It's like, this is something my therapist actually said to me recently. Like, people won't change until it's more painful to stay the same than it is to change. And so I think like your article was like so good talking about like the ways this actually impacts us. And I do feel like sex life could be the thing that actually influences people, because the only thing more uncool than being anti-phones and anti-social media is like having bad sex, like a bad sex life. Like, people, I feel like, will protect that with everything. So I am curious, like, your thoughts on exactly how people's sex lives have been impacted, and if that's maybe enough for people to make a change.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you feel very optimistic about that, because sometimes I do not feel as optimistic about it. I feel like there is a strong undercurrent in the culture right now that has said that, like, sex isn't important. And that, you know, it's totally fine to not care about sex at all. And like, of course that's fine for like, you know, a subset of the population, but like, as like a broad cultural trend, to live in a culture that largely does not care about sex, like, is not healthy. It's not lively. It's not fun to be in. But I think that I feel a little less optimistic about how people look at it, because I do think that like the phone does placate a lot of whatever sexual tendencies we have. And like, a lot of people are, there's a lot of like men in particular who would rather just like watch porn than try to pursue women for a number of reasons. Like, you know, they think it's difficult to meet women. It's expensive to go on dates, whatever. But there also are just like a lot of men who have found that they like visually prefer porn stars to real women, that they are dissatisfied by real life sex, and that they also themselves can't perform the way that they imagine themselves needing to perform. Like yourself, that like think that like that is like so fucking uncool, that like we just like that we culturally won't put up with that kind of behavior. And like, I really do hope that we all see this as like, yeah, that sucks, and like we should care about people having like a healthy life.
It's like, having sex takes work. Like, if you want to bring someone to orgasm, like, you got to put in some time, depending on, you know, who you're working with, but like, it takes labor, it takes work, it takes paying attention, it takes being present. Like, and if you're on your phone all day and getting these really, really quick dopamine hits, it's like, that's like a task, like doing your dishes. It's like, it takes a lot. And so you're going to be like less inclined to do that. So I totally see like the correlation there. And yeah, it feels like we have like a sexless society, but also like, so deeply horned up. Like, even those trends where people would like, I don't know if you guys saw or heard about this, but there would be a girl on TikTok and people would comment like, I bet it's pink, and like really just like sexualizing and like taking things so far. And it's just like, it's just porn. Maybe porn has replaced sex altogether. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that I mentioned like my book proposal thing. That's basically the thesis of the book, is that like we have a very, a sexless culture that is also simultaneously hypersexual, and like those two problems have created each other. Like, we live in a visually hypersexual culture, like a digitally hypersexual culture, but not like a lived, there's no lived hypersexuality here.
We're so phone addicted. We're using these apps to cover our like basic needs, like Postmates for food, like porn for like, you have this like physiological need for sex, but like you can put that away really quickly with like porn. It's like, we're using these apps to just really quickly like do that. But it's like, yeah, we've lost the quality, but if there's an app for it, we'll use it, you know? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I also feel like we're with a lot of the other apps, maybe not with porn, but like, you know, there's an app to like get your laundry done or whatever. Like we're in this really weird in-between stage where like it's the worst version of all of those things. Like you're saying, the quality has declined, but that like, we also have no alternative. Like, you know, I went to one of those like walk-in clinics recently because I was sick, and it was like, I had to download an app to like get my like results. And it's like, well, I don't really want to do that. And then like the app like doesn't fucking work. So we're stuck in this like digital loop of like, it's all online and it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
So.
I was like, okay, probably like maybe 10 years ago at this point, the website I worked at, we did a freelancer did this piece where she lived inside for a whole week. This was 2013. So way before COVID. She lived inside for a whole week. And like, this was novel at the time. Like she used Seamless, I think was the app at the time, Uber Eats or whatever, and she used like a Peloton or like whatever was like pre-Peloton, and basically like the whole thing was like, could I live in New York City
that's
but not
crazy,
leave my apartment?
Because that is normal
that was, like,
now.
A novel.
Oh, that's so scary.
That's
and
so
then,
funny.
Approximately in like 2015 or so, I pitched kind of like the opposite. I was like, I've become so reliant on all of these various like apps. Let me see, like, what if I tried to live in New York City without any of my apps for a
you
week?
Should
like
do that
Uber
again
or,
and document it.
Like, Seamless or whatever, whatever. And my editor was kind of like, no, she was like, no, that's like not really like a thing, basically. But I was thinking about it yesterday, like when I was walking, and I was like, no, my pitch was just ahead of its time because
yeah,
it is
seriously
a thing.
Ahead of its time.
I just was way ahead of my time, the same way that that other freelancer girl was ahead of her time in a fucked up way. I was ahead of my time in a fucked up way because, yeah, I was like, now that I've become so reliant. But that kind of goes back to like my weird experiment with going off social media, because what's interesting to me is like when you remove something, what will fill its place? And like that's what I was curious about. Like if I take away – if I wake up and there's no Instagram to open, what am I going to do at that time? And I was wanting to know like that. And so it's the same thing where it's like, if I take away Uber, well, how am I going to get there? You know what I mean? Like I have to get there some other way, like whatever. So yeah, it's, I don't know. I think it's a good experiment for anyone to do, even just for like 1 day, 2 days, like take something away and see what you fill that time with instead.
Yeah. No, I think that you should repitch that story somewhere else now because it sounds so good.
Thank you. Maybe I will.
Mm. Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like a lot of people do really care, and like people there are a lot of people who don't want to be on their phones as much anymore. And like, I do feel optimistic about that. And I think there are going to be people, you know, like us who just want things to be different.
I think too, like look at all, there are a good amount of companies who want to make like dumb phones or make like smartphones with limited capabilities or make like various, like there's a lot of people who seem interested in creating solutions of having like basically just enough tech to be useful without making you dumb, like, yes, or without like making you having ADHD or giving you whatever. Like, I think a lot of people are interested in this. There's a lot of like niche products on the market. There's, think about like, what was it like a year or so ago when all the 22-year-olds were getting flip phones because they didn't want to have like anxiety while they were out. And they were like, I love having a flip phone because then I go out and I don't have to think about what's being posted. Or like, I think that there is a natural aversion that is like promising. But again, like I just like the toothpaste out of the tube, it's not going back in. Like we're at where we're at. But
yeah,
it also seems like it is still all very new. So it's not necessarily like written in stone. And it seems like there's enough people who aren't into it. And then like, think also about all the, like, cause all we're hearing is about people who are also online. Think about all the people who just reject being online. Like think about like random climber guys in like the desert who just like have an Android and never have an Instagram they haven't posted on in 5 years. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They're out there.
I think you're totally right. I think maybe like I'm overly blackpilled on all this because I just am online too much. And like, I think there is a real world that's still out there. I do feel optimistic.
A past therapist said to me once, she was like, you think the world is like full of extroverts because that's who's out in the world. Extroverts. So like all of us introverts are at home. So you don't know how much maybe we are like more normal than we think, but we don't see each other. And I was like, damn.
Completely.
But I actually did want to talk about one more topic, if we have time, which was like the feeling of like, I need to be on social media for my job, which I think is something all three of us have said before, despite everything we know about how the phone makes us feel, how social media makes us feel, yet maybe an excuse, maybe a justification. And as I've mentioned a few times already, like something I've tried to run away from, I've tried to have different career paths so I didn't need to be on social media or feel like I needed to know what's going on. I've wanted to just be like, you know, I'm going to go to California, I'm going to log off, I'm going to have a copywriting job where I don't need to know about what's going on. And couldn't hack it. Like, tried to embrace it. It's like, I'm just going to do the minimum and I'm going to live a more like kind of like spiritual, artistic life that is free from the time that I live in. I wanted to live like a life that could be lived at any point in time, not tied to the times that I live in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a dissonance between knowing something is bad for you and then justifying it as labor and then saying like, I'm not like other people who are on here. I'm doing this because it's business, but your soul doesn't know that. Your eye strain doesn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, like I probably chose this career path so that I could be online. I still think cutting back is very possible. I think there's like a lot of writers in particular who like hit a certain point in their career where they're like, okay, now I can log off of Twitter. I've seen a lot of people do that, and I think that they are doing it pretty successfully. So, yeah.
I know, but it's like you have to get to a certain level of success almost before you can leave social media. So it's like, listen, I've got a book out. You know what I'm about. You know who I am. And you can contact me by email.
Yeah.
I think somebody will
get there.
Like having a social media presence is so different than like the intense consumption of content. Like as someone who like creates content, like when I'm like zoned in watching like 4 hours of TikTok a day, I am not in a creative space. But it's when I'm like on a walk, taking a shower, like that's when I get ideas to actually create content. And so that's something
that's very true.
Like noticed with myself. I'm like, I'm telling myself I need to be like seeing every video to be good at my job or to like do it right or to stay relevant or whatever. But there comes a point where it's like too far and you're actually inhibiting your ability to do your job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
I know. I was thinking like, as I was thinking about this, I was like, I think these days at least, I feel more inspired being in the masses, like being on the bus and seeing stuff or like being in a crowded place and watching people parent their children or watching like a popular reality TV show and seeing something that like
100%,
gets my brain going rather than in the past when I've been super interested in like a very niche online community or something like that. Yeah. And I think, like, in a way, you could argue that more online input can, like, narrow your take rather than, like, sharpen your actual views. Like, it's almost like you have, like, your brain, whatever, and you're not actually, like, you think you're sharpening, like, and becoming, like, better honed at what you're saying, but you're actually, like, putting yourself into something, like, structurally narrow rather than, once again, go sit on the bus and, like, see what happens out there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I try to do that. I try, like, if I'm walking to the train or just out and about, I really, like, try not to listen to podcasts or anything. I try to just absorb. I mean, I might still be, like, looking at my phone when I get on the train, but yeah, it's good to, like, just hear the random things people say.
Yeah.
And this is the plus of living in a big city like New York or LA, because no matter how addicted to our phones we are, we live in dense places and we can't not, like, be looking at, around, hearing from, annoyed by other people.
Yeah, completely. It's good for us. It's good for us to do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today. This was, like, so interesting. We will leave your socials in the description, but if you want to say, like, your name and how people can find you.
Yeah. So my name is Magdalene Taylor. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Magda J. Taylor. I'm also on Substack. My newsletter is called Many Such Cases. So you can find me in those places.
Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you for having me.
Anyone who's made it all the way here, please subscribe to our new pod. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.